You're listening to The Kylo Show, the podcast where we talk about how to keep your love on no matter what and why whole healthy families are going to save the world. Of all the Kylo principles, probably the most misunderstood one is Kylo principle number 5, healthy boundaries. To have healthy boundaries, you need to know what they are, what they aren't, how to set them, and then how to protect them. You'll get the answers to all those questions and more in this week's episode of The Kylo Show, starting now.
Welcome to The Kylo Show.
We're back.
We are. Man, it feels like it's been a long week for me.
Yeah, it has been.
We had a lot going on.
We had a lot going on.
I didn't feel well.
You know what was missing?
What?
A tree falling down.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and then tree fell down. And we had fair. So, guys, we are giving you everything we have today.
That's it. We're digging deep.
Because it's been a long week. But we are happy to be here and talk about boundaries.
Yep.
We're getting to what everyone likes to talk about.
It's top question ever.
Always. Every parenting event I'm at, you know, I think boundaries is one of the first questions that rises to the top on all the things, even the other conferences we've done.
You know, out of our 5 Kylo principles, you know, whether that be teaching people to be powerful or realizing that there is a war between fear and love, or learning how to be a person who pursues connection, you know, like I will, no matter what, I will choose connection. Being a respectful communicator, like I'm going to lower anxiety while I communicate. And, but when we finally get to healthy boundaries, honoring boundaries, poof, gosh, what do we do with the scary people?
Right.
What do we do with the scary children?
Yeah.
What do we do with ourselves when we're scary?
All of those things.
So here we are.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, again, with boundaries, it's such a, it feels scary to set a boundary because you don't know what the other person's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I my experience is that a lot of people feel like they're having good communication skills or they're trying to keep their love on and pursue that connection and be powerful. But when we get to the boundaries piece, it's like the wheels start wobbling a little bit and it gets scarier and scarier. So, again, with children, I think boundaries communicate so much for value and culture. That's what, I mean, that's probably one of the biggest things that I've realized when it comes to creating boundaries in our home is it just creates a defined line on some things that we're really saying yes to and really saying no to.
And it, like everything else, it flows downhill, meaning that the parents have to understand what boundaries are, or the children will never learn it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they'll learn to defend themselves, but they won't learn how to prioritize their value system until later in life when, you know, they're either traumatized or really confused about stuff.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one of the big things about setting boundaries is realizing, you know, what do you want to protect? You know, I love your illustration, which I think we've maybe said before, but the, you know, you throw your wallet in the middle of the room. You know, that illustration to me is so simple, but it brings so much clarity. So I did this at a youth leadership event that are gathering that they had us come speak at talking about boundaries. And I kind of just displayed, you know, if I put my wallet in the middle of the room and walked away, what would you do? And they, you know, they all said the same thing. Like, wouldn't think there was much in there if you didn't care. But then I talked about putting it in a vault and then, you know, putting guards in front of it. And then this increased curiosity of like, what was in there that I should have picked it up when it was on the middle of the floor?
Yeah. And so boundaries do communicate value. They communicate something that's valuable to you. And they also communicate what is yours. So if you are setting boundaries around anything, you're saying to anyone who's watching, I'm responsible for what's inside here.
Yeah.
This is my yard. This is my house. Mm-hmm. This is my bedroom. This is my car. You know, there is a message going out that I will take care of this. It's my job mm-hmm. to take care of what's inside mine. Mm-hmm. So the boundaries communicate there's something that has changed from you perceiving life from that's not mine, that is mine.
Yeah.
And now I will demonstrate how I take care of what is mine.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about the boundaries communicate value. And I remember in a season of my life as a 16-year-old girl who was scary to you and mom and ended up in a relationship with a not so awesome choice. And really this young man trying to pursue a relationship with me. And you always have the best analogies, I swear, of how you come up with them still, I don't understand. But you put into perspective things that are just so easy to transfer from, oh, I get that. But I think you gave an illustration of, you should say, I mean, you were there. I was not. I was at home. But
well, the question was, after he traumatized our family by his intrusion, and we still allowed him to have access to our family, and in that meaning, he could sit in the living room with you,
right?
You know, and he said, I think he asked your mom something like, "You know, can I take her to the store? Can I take her? Basically, can I take her out of this house, out of your, out of your eyesight?" And I said, well, just imagine that, you know, there's a bag here with $1 billion in it. And you asked me if you could just put it in your car and drive it around town real quick.
Yeah.
What do you think I would say? How much respect would have to be healed up in this relationship for that answer to ever flip green? Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I said, right. Yeah. So welcome to my living room.
Yes. Which, again, I mean, looking at it now, years later, I mean, I'm almost 36. It's going to happen this week. But, you know, so that was, gosh, that's a long time ago. I didn't want to say how many years ago that was. But I think in that moment, there might have been some more frustration. But not too far after that moment happened, probably within months, to see the protection and the fight that you were willing to have for me. Mm-hmm. You know, more than what I knew I needed in that moment.
It's kind of crazy how parenting is so frustrated by the difference of perception of the same thing. You know, and like, you're trying to ruin my life. You're trying to control me. Like, or save your life. One of the two.
Right.
I'm trying to do one of the two. Yeah.
One of the two.
You're welcome. Yeah. We'll get to that.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think, I mean, that's a more teenage perspective, you know, being able to set a boundary. I remember mom putting it as we knew that she wanted candy and so she was going to get it any way she could. So we had to create a boundary with how much candy she could have, which was the living room.
Mm-hmm.
But I think about parents that are toddlers who are living in this constant state of just toddlers have this ability to, they're like the Energizer Bunny. They just kind of go.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much wear that happens with toddler parents that I feel like parents are unaware of what they need until their boundaries long gone, you know?
Exhaustion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when you set limits as a parent, you're going to start with take good care of yourself.
Yes.
You have to take good care of yourself. It has to be a core value of yours.
Yeah.
And when parents think, oh, it's just too selfish to ask for help. It's too selfish to the whole fun and ruin thing is all about. I have had enough of your thing that you're doing. So you can do your thing over there away from me as much as you need to do it. Because the closer you are to me, the faster my battery drains.
Yeah. The screaming, the tantrums, the, you know, like last night, I was laughing. Lincoln's not a toddler, but he's 9. He didn't want what we had for dinner. He was like, can I have something different? Can I do this? And, you know, just even the simple boundary of I'm not making another meal, so you can have this or nothing, you know, because when you begin to negotiate with terrorists, like you say before, you start to just wear yourself down. And that's where I think a lot of that toddler land parents are sacrificing boundaries and taking good care of themselves with the negotiation process. So really just honing in on what does it look like to take good care of yourself? I think to identify that is probably a big thing that we don't do. I mean, as a mom, I speak to a lot of women and mothers, and that's a very common thing. I can't speak for men. I don't speak with a lot of men about this, but it's just this thing that we believe that's true about motherhood is that you have to just
live,
absorb. You are a sponge to all things, which means that, you know, you are in this place of constantly exhausted, you know. So, and that is not going to set yourself up for success to protect anything.
No.
You are very weak when you're exhausted.
And it's probably less mom and dad as much as it is, are you more accommodating in your personality or are you more demanding in your personality? Mm. It probably shows up bigger as well, which is a low battery usually indicates some kind of anxiety or something for the adult. And so the passive accommodating person is more likely to just have this self-sacrificing martyr thing that they do, where the more demanding parent is when they get that battery going down, they might, you know, end up more angry and aggressive and, you know, like
the authoritarian
and shift. So the low battery sign, you know, it's kind of a little light blinking in the lower right part of your eye. You know, it's kind of going, you better set a limit. You better set a limit.
And I think, you know, I tell toddler parents all the time, you are in the trenches. This is the season of trenches, you know, that you are taking ground little by little, but you have to remember you're fighting a war for years later down the road. And really those boundaries and what you say you're going to do and you following through are crucial right here. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like it when it's over a goldfish, but it's going to be feel like it when it's over a girlfriend. So I think that, you know, you need to pay attention to, I'm saying yes today for tomorrow. And that's really that.
So winning the war with the goldfish helps with the girlfriend and ultimately with the grandchildren.
There you go. We got all of it.
There we go.
Perfect. Yeah. I think that, again, this is the place where, you know, if I know, when I'm speaking with women that are exhausted and they're overwhelmed and they've just absorbed, they've lost sight of what their priorities are in the home. You know, often they're disconnected from their spouse. They feel like their spouse isn't helping. Then they feel like their children are, you know, the only thing that are working. And so it becomes that this culture that you set out to create no longer has even remotely close to the goal that you actually want. And so, you know, I think that when it comes to boundaries in a family, you really do have to refocus yourself towards, you know, what is your priority? And I know that my priority always has been first. I mean, obviously the Lord is the head, everything there. But the next thing in my house is Ben. Him and I and our relationship and our ability to communicate and to draw strength from one another brings our best self to these kids. And, you know, when I start to prioritize the kids because their needs are louder than my spouse, and that's how this starts to flop easily. And so paying attention even there, you know, like Ben won't take the girls out on a date until he's gotten made sure that him and I have had time, you know, and they'll be asking. But he knows that the priority is that my wife is always first. And then he shows that to these girls. So one day when they're married, that's what they're looking for. And the same thing for Lincoln. And it is a beautiful thing as you work towards creating a culture where you've got all those five principles in parenting and really chasing after protecting boundaries and what that looks like to create the culture you want in your home.
The Parenting 101 has just a lot of illustrations of how we're going to set boundaries. And mm-hmm. so let's just make sure that everybody knows in our Life Academy that you would be going to the Parenting 101 to find out that, you know, you take good care of yourself. You say what you mean. You mean what you say. Mm-hmm. And you let the consequences do the teaching, you know, while you feel sad for them.
I know. That's probably the hardest part. I tell parents all the time, you are in the way mm-hmm. of them learning.
Yeah.
You got to get out of the way. Otherwise, they look at you as being the one that has to make all decisions for them. And it becomes this codependent relationship, which is not good. That's mm-hmm. not what you want to develop.
And codependency would be like healthy boundaries is I take care of what is mine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I communicate. And codependency is I try to take care of what's yours.
Yeah.
And so I've, you know, just like the walls of isolation mm-hmm. separate me and they give no hope of reconciliation.
Yeah.
So the purpose of a healthy boundary really is to protect relationship and restore disconnection
mm-hmm.
long term.
Yeah, it's so good. I think this week of fair that we had with the kids, I'll end with this story, is, you know, Delaney is not the most assertive to go in and find help. She doesn't like to. It's hard. It's uncomfortable. It's awkward. I don't know what the struggle exactly is, but it's all of those things. And her 4-H leader says, you know, I don't want any parents in the barn. This is all you. You got to clean out the stalls. You got to do all the stuff. So she's up all night freaking out that I'm abandoning her.
Mm.
She comes in at some point, 2 a.m, crying. And I'm like, honey, I'm not going to leave you. I said, but I'm going to let you lead this. And so we're in the barn at one point. She cannot get her pig to get washed. It took 40 minutes. Should not have taken that long, but it took so long. And I said, honey, I believe in you. This is yours to own. I said, and this is me going to walk away. You've got to figure this out. But it was just this display. And we use that phrase all weekend, which is, I love you, but this is me walking away right now. And every opportunity I gave her with leaving of I love you, I'm for you, but I'm not going to take ownership of something that's not mine.
Mm.
She just rised and she tackled it. And by the end of it, the confident glow on her face, I was like, this is what I want to see happen.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're afraid to give those boundaries to your kids, I would encourage you from one parent to another, it's okay to say I love you, but this is me walking away.
Ownership lurks within their boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's true. You can do this. All right. Well, we're going to jump into questions, so should be fun.
Boom.
If you want to be successful in setting healthy boundaries with your children and in your home, then you need the Loving on Purpose Life Academy course, Parenting 101. It'll give you helpful teaching and practical tools that you can implement right away. To get Parenting 101, visit lovingonpurpose.com, click Courses, and get access to Parenting 101 today.
Okay, our first question comes from Brittany, which she's got a great name.
Mm.
Like it already.
Hi. We have a 10-year-old son who also has ADHD, which has impacted everyone's life in our house. It is very severe ADHD, impulsive type. And we've done a lot to try and manage that, and we are now homeschooling. We're doing a lot of things to try and help him manage his own behavior, and he's come a long way. However, recently he's been doing a lot of what seems like retaliating against myself and my husband. He's been stealing like my phone and iPad, any kind of technology he can have. And recently bought $200 worth of games on my phone. He's just doing and just writing nasty messages on my technology. I don't know who it's directed toward, but I need an effective strategy on how to manage this. He was recently baptized. He believes in Jesus. He's going through some sort of anger, retaliation type behavior, and I am feeling lost.
Okay. Well, that's not a fun feeling.
No.
It's it's frustrating to feel, you know, I think there's some pain in the unknown of those messages are painful and different things. From a practical standpoint, first thought I have is I would up the security on your iPhone and iPad.
Yes.
That would be what I would be doing. So if they do come across it, they can't access it at all. You know, I think this is a game of consistency in my head, a little bit of, oh, bummer. Feel free to, as soon as I feel like a genius, which looks like you can have my phone as soon as I feel like I can trust you that you're going to handle it well, buddy. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. I know you're frustrated. I know you're sad. I know you're angry. What do you need? I think leaning into that question of what you need and making it a practice and creating a safe place for them to actually give you that need, because it sounds like he wants something. Maybe it's just the fun of technology, but he also might be crying out for something else. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I think there's probably several layers here.
Yeah.
One is they've been doing this for 10 years, so they've built all kinds of structure around this young man, no doubt. At the same time, I am wondering how he's getting hold of this phone and, you know, breaching security. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you get access to game accounts? How did you get access to anything without my permission? And how is it that you have access to the internet?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, no.
Yeah.
Here you go. This is how you'll be doing this. But this probably is mostly a power struggle.
Yeah.
This boy feels successful in pushing buttons and coloring outside the box. And so I would assume that there's a, you know, I know probably so coming.
Mm-hmm.
And like zero reaction to all the colorful stuff he's writing online.
Yeah.
And oh no, $200 debt. Well, you know, we pay $5 an hour. Let's see, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work you'll be doing for us to pay off that. But don't worry, you know, you're gonna have lots of work to look forward to in the future.
There's,
you know,
lots of Saturdays
year. Yeah, we work for a living. Uh-huh. So you're just getting a head start. You're 10. Good job.
And I think that, I mean, to tie back into boundaries, this is just one of those struggles where, you know, parenting isn't about convenience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about, you know, helping these children develop to be successful adults. Mm-hmm. And this is where the sacrifice comes sometimes on our end, and the uncomfortable exchange of, you know, not reacting, to manage yourself.
And you're talking about parents that aren't in the trenches like this lady's talking. Brittany's talking about some pretty severe situation. I mean, this is a dynamic that these people are, their whole family is wrapped up in the energy of trying to direct this young man.
Which is why it's probably even more priority, I would think, to dive in and really tackle this as much as possible.
Yeah. And another, you know, key for ADHD children is the emphasis of the consequences, because they have a pretty poor connection between cause and effect. So the consequence has to be more extreme than it would be for a child who's like, whoa, that's hot. Mm-hmm. I won't do that twice. These guys don't believe it. They just like, oh, I think I can beat this thing this time. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to touch it faster. I'm going to lick my fingers and then touch it. I'm going to figure out a way for this to not have the same effect on me that everybody else seems to be adjusting to. And then he's super impulsive. So it's moments later, maybe many moments later, before he's figuring out, oh, when I pushed on that and it fell over and all that stuff broke, it's because I pushed on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just takes a while for them to
grasp,
to see it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Brittany, we're praying for you and your family and breakthrough. And, you know, just remember, God gave you this young man, because he believes in you. So I would just keep fighting for him. Mm. All right, we're going to take our next question from Renee.
How do I set boundaries with an 18-year-old when he is still living in my house and is no fun to be with?
She is short and direct to the point.
Yeah.
A girl's like,
she had enough.
She is all done. You can hear it. Renee, I'm here for you, girl. I don't have any 18-year-olds, but I think they're, it's a feel free to live here when you're going to be fun.
That has to be an option.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise you are powerlessly stuck with the situation.
And you sound frustrated.
Yeah. And the, you can't tell me what to do. I'm 18 years old. You go, okay, well, that's right. You're absolutely right. Let me inform you of what else changed when you turned 18.
Congratulations. You got rent.
You have options
yes.
that you'd never had before.
Yeah. And I think really leaning into the permission, opportunity, and resources that we talked about before, it really plays into, you know, it's a resource to live in my house. It's an opportunity for you. And I get to give permission. Mm-hmm. And if you are no fun to be with, there's no more permission. And yes, this I think the hard part of that big step, again, I don't have adult children, but you do, is the concern of breaking or damaging connection. Mm-hmm. But I would challenge, how strong is your connection currently if this child is violating your relationship already with your living arrangements? Mm-hmm. You're just driving yourself crazy and probably wearing yourself out, which is what we've talked about before, taking good care of yourself. So I don't know how successful this will continue to be if we stay in this state.
Yeah, and I'll come home when I want. I'll smoke pot at the house mm-hmm. if I want. I'll...
whatever.
You know, I'll sneak in and out of sexual encounters around you and not around you. I will disrespect the heck out of everything because I'm 18. Well, that is tearing your relationship apart.
Yeah.
You know, you're disconnected living in that. Mm-hmm. So if you had a roommate, you know, if you were leasing this room to somebody who was paying you, mm-hmm. it would come with requirements.
Right.
You'd say, hey, you know, no cats, no
smoking
loud noises
house.
After yeah. 10 mm-hmm. o'clock, zero mm-hmm. pot, drugs, parties here. You know, you would have a set of requirements. Mm-hmm. So you got to move it closer to that. When there's, especially when there's high levels of disrespect yeah. going on towards your boundaries and standard of living, you're going to have to say, all right, you have X days to either adjust and comply, or you get to live somewhere else. And I will pay the first month's rent on the storage for your stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it gets right down to it. Yeah. Or you'll beg, argue, yell, be disrespectful, tear your relationship up, and then finally it will happen. Then they'll finally be miserable yeah. enough to where they go, but they blame it on you mm-hmm. instead of are faced with the reality that I chose in the most unfortunate way to not live here, not work here, not be in this relationship. The life's full of this stuff. Mm-hmm. When you don't take care of what's inside that is yours, it goes untaken care of unless somebody codependently jumps in and tries to rescue you from mm-hmm. you.
Yep, that's it. All right, Renee, I hope you can jump in and set that hard boundary because it's coming one way or another most likely.
Yeah.
So, all right. Next question comes from Katie.
Our 7-year-old has always really needed her things to be her things, but this has caused a lot of conflict in our home. We want to teach ownership where they respect each other's things and each other's space, but it becomes a point of major conflict if anybody wants to touch her things. Everybody else shares really well, but she has no desire to share anything that she has, specifically with the next oldest, who's a brother. Sometimes she'll choose to share with her younger sister and sometimes with our 1.5-year-old. But when it comes to sharing with brother, there's just no way. And there's so much animosity there. Do you have any tips on helping with encouraging sharing once they're that old seems like we kind of might have missed the ship there. How can we encourage brotherly love and sharing amongst those two without crushing her need for ownership of things and needing to take care of things?
You know, I think this will be something that'll show up later on for her, is if she's no fun to be around, nobody's going to want to hang out with her, mm-hmm. you know?
I missed how old she was.
She's seven.
Seven.
So
there's hope.
There is lots of hope, lots and lots of hope. And I think it's, you know, thankfully she's at an age where you really can give pretty good feedback. You know, you can start kind of displaying, like, how do you think this affects your brother when you'll share with one but you won't share with him? What message does that send to your brother? Mm-hmm. You know, is that what you want your brother to believe, is that you don't love him as much as your other siblings? Mm-hmm. You know, because that's kind of the translation that starts to break down, is they don't like me. I've had to have this discussion with our three kids because, you know, one tends to hang out with one more than the other. And so it was translating that there was less value for the other one. And so it was just a display of the impact that you're having isn't our family culture. Mm-hmm. So we need some adjustment. And I think that that's great that there's ownership and taking good care of things. You know, if the brother's breaking everything that he's playing with, that's a different situation. If that's not happening, I think I would be really pushing in the, I think you're making a mess when you withhold loving, you know, by sharing. You know, you could also say, oh, you can't use any silverware today because that's all mine. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, there's several things to check. One would be, is it a power struggle? Is it like when I say I want my thing back, it disappears because you take off running with it.
Yeah.
So if I never give it to you, I never have to feel that terrible feeling of being so powerless. Mm-hmm. In other aspects of the relationship, is there respect? Is there connection? Mm-hmm. Is there, you know, the culture of your home kind of thing you're talking about is love, connection, respect, and responsibility. Is that going on between these two normally, or is this the only place where I feel like my life is powerful over my stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think the girls have had moments where the younger one, Addie, will go in and take Delaney's mascara or something like that, you know, because she's an older sister and has all the fun makeup or whatever. And I remember something got ruined and Delaney's response was, you can never use my stuff ever again. And there's lots of intensity in the exchange. And I said, I don't feel like that's real. I said, how would I respond if you accidentally broke something of mine? You know, would that be the response that says forgiveness and I trust you to try again? And so I think, again, being able to kind of shift and add different language to the different exchanges and be paying attention, like you said, like, the, is it a power struggle? What's going on? You know, are they feeling powerless? Is there a connection that's been broken? So I'd be looking to identify what the problem is so you can attack it with the right language. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, thanks so much, Katie, for your question. We had some good questions today, so we're going to move on to our testimony next.
Boom.
Building your own whole healthy family takes time and training, but don't worry, we got you covered. We talked about Parenting 101 e-course in the Loving on Purpose Life Academy, but we have other courses as well, like Priority of Connection, Parenting Sexuality, Kylo for Kids, and a whole bunch more. You can get individual access to each one of those courses for $49, or get access to all of them for just $7.99 a month, and you can cancel anytime. To do that, go to lovingonpurpose.com, click courses, and get all access today.
Okay, so today's testimony comes from Ashley. Hmm. I feel like we've got the whole LOP team on this.
We do. We're
somehow just... Brittany and Ashley, we're just having fun.
There is a time in my life that I thought my value was based in how I was always available, lending myself out to others to be what was needed in certain situations, letting people lord over, control, manipulate me. I believed that if I stood up for myself or told someone no, I was the bad guy for not being what the other person needed. It was exhausting and emotionally draining. Through Kylo, I learned that my time is valuable And through boundaries, I can have healthy connections without having the candle burning at both ends. And that not having boundaries did not show others how much I loved myself. Although life is busy, I'm now able to do life with low stress. The time I give to others has purpose, and I am a powerful person, loving myself in a way that encourages others to be powerful too. Thank you, Danny and Brittany, for these tools. They are life-changing.
There it is.
Ta-da.
I know.
She got her time back.
She got her respect back, too.
Yep.
Nice. Some respect from other people, but also her self-respect.
Mm-hmm. Value for... It's amazing how, you know, when your value's coming from your ability to be available rather than your ability to be powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the shift that happens.
And there's a pretty strong cultural upbringing, especially for people from highly structured environments, you know, military, religion, maybe even a wealth. You mm-hmm. know, there's this communication to the female, you know, that they're just supposed to kind of be accommodating and let all the real important things happen, and we'll eventually get to you and the children. And like that message shapes generations of people to really believe that there's lots of stuff around them, other people, other needs that are so much more important. And it's not that they're more important as much as they're as important.
Mm-hmm.
And until you get to see that your needs are as important as mine, there's not really a sense of sacrifice. I'm not sacrificing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, you know, I'm going to have a terrible example right here.
We've talked about your great examples this whole time.
Yeah, but it's the dime and the nickel, you know, like
right,
you know, like, oh, this dime's so much smaller than that nickel. I'll just, you know, I'll why don't you trade me? And that wasn't a sacrifice
mm-hmm.
because you took something from somebody. Well, the opposite is true, where I don't value myself, my time, my needs, so to give them up to meet yours isn't. That's not what we're talking about. When the Bible talks about consider other people's needs first,
mm-hmm.
you know, prioritize other people, give preference to other people,
mm-hmm.
it's because you actually know what you're sacrificing.
Mm-hmm.
Then it becomes, it's a real sacrifice. Otherwise, it's just an obligation. I'm just obligated to surrender myself at every situation when I meet somebody that I value.
Yeah.
And that is how you teach your children to be disrespectful to you,
mm-hmm.
is you live a life where you teach them that their needs are more important than yours, and they never have any respect for yours.
Mm-hmm.
And then your overreaction is anger and disrespect, trying to fight for something that you know you should be able to have,
mm-hmm.
and the whole practice of boundaries is I communicate what's valuable and I take care of what is mine
mm-hmm.
that is valuable.
Yeah.
And then we do that as a family.
Yeah.
So there's lots of requests, lots of permission, lots of accommodating, but also a lot of requirement of respect.
Yeah. You know, again, I'll reference Fair a lot in this episode because I feel like we learned. It was such a crazy experience to be a part of, and really grateful for it. But you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking about different exchanges I watched between parent and child while I was there. And there were some where, you know, the parents are probably doing more than they should be doing, and because this is really supposed to be the kids thing, but they're in there doing more than they should be doing.
It's easier to do it yourself.
Yeah, it is, you know. And then there were parents where, you know, somebody was late to feeding their pig and it's screaming. I don't know if you knew that pigs scream, but they do. It's very loud. And, you know, the young boy is irritated. I don't know why. But what I'm watching is the father just use profanity and yelling at him for being disrespectful. And I'm just standing there kind of baffled at, what do you expect when you, you know, do this exchange of extreme disrespect for disrespect? And it's just this crazy cycle. And then, you know, I'm watching parents that are, you know, direct and like, you got to do this, and trying to encourage them. And, you know, it was just interesting to just it was like everyone's parenting skills were on display. Oh, yeah. in the barn. And your ability to navigate when you've overstepped and taking on someone else's responsibility, when you, what your culture might be and what you're protecting and what you're producing. And, you know, I was so grateful for all the work that Ben and I had put in, you know, with our kiddos. Is, you know, sure, we were helping, but I feel like there was a good line of different things that we were trying to let them have ownership of. But I think for me, one of the takeaways of, you know, the boundaries that we had established, you know, Ben and I are sitting at the park bench, just the girls are doing their feeding, cleaning their pen. And I said, it's so weird to be like
observers.
Yeah, it's just so great. But, you know, if they got stuck, they would ask for help from us if they couldn't, you know, they needed it, whatever. But, you know, we got in the car every single night when we left. We had to be there by 6 in the morning, and we often didn't leave until after 6 at night. And we were there, it's 106 most of the time. It felt like it was 106 and 7, whatever.
Triple digits.
Yes, it was so hot. But almost immediately when we got in the car, both girls, all they would do is, thank you so much. Thank you so much for helping. Thank you so much for giving. Thank you so much for investing. Mm-hmm. And not one time did we ask for it, or was there an expectation? And it wasn't about just that day. It was really about the, since February when
the
we got
journey.
These. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think in this moment, they realized how much help had been given beforehand. And, you know, again, it's just so much of it in my mind comes back to what we were able to set boundaries on, you know, in different moments along the way. And challenging them to rise and to see what's happening in our culture. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's just really fun to see the value that they're growing in, you know, because of something that we're helping protect.
And, you know, the gratitude is from receiving something valuable, mm. You know, and when you're entitled, you don't see the contribution of the parents as valuable. You see it as obligation. Like, yeah. Well, you owe me all the stuff that you did. Why would I say thank you for what you owe me? Mm-hmm. But when they realize my parents have a demand for respect for their time, their energy, their resources, that cultivates gratitude. Mm-hmm. So I've had the question numerous times, like, what do you do about entitlement? Mm-hmm. Well, you have good boundaries, yeah. Is what you do. You teach the people around you, starting with your children, what it is that you are sacrificing, mm-hmm. for their benefit, mm-hmm. so that they do say thank you. And if they don't, you teach them, mm-hmm. to say thank you, so that they recognize, mm-hmm. that, you're giving me your time.
Yeah.
You're giving me your money. Oh, mm-hmm. my gosh. I didn't realize parents don't have to give kids money. I thought they totally did.
Yeah.
That's what the parents' job was.
This is what we do. Like, yeah.
No, this is how you get it, is with gratitude.
Mm-hmm. I was working with a client, and she said, you know, I need to work with my daughter about gratitude because she never says please or thank you. And I said, okay. I said, you know, let me ask you a question. I said, how much do you model it? And she starts laughing. And she goes, she was recording the session for her husband. She says, my husband's going to laugh and love that you just said that. And she goes, I'm not very good at it. Mm. I said, well, you know, we teach our children so much more than we give credit to. And I said, if you want to see something produced in your children, you're going to have to lead in it, mm. you know, and you talk about entitlement. And I always talk about how, you know, when we parent out of this place of convenience, we get entitlement, mm-hmm. because, man, it's way harder to develop my character and require myself to be mature enough and responsible enough to lead in something different. And when I do, I see this integrity rise out of my children, and it's amazing, but it requires something different from mm-hmm. me. So mm-hmm. you have to be paying attention to, you can take the easy route in parenting. It will never produce what you want it to, though. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's the catch there is, you know, that funner room, people tell me all the time, I do it all day long. I'm like, yes, you do. You do it all day long. And then one day, you don't do it all day long. Mm-hmm. And that's the switch. That's when that it changes. But mm-hmm. it's that, this is the boundary. This is the boundary. This is the boundary. It's not changing. It's not going away. This is the value I have. This is what I'm going to protect. I'm not changing my mind. I know you're going to keep asking me, here's the consequence, and I'm going to follow through with it. That is so crucial in developing.
This reminds me of Adeline learning to read.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when she was little and she ran into these reading challenges, it feels like the whole family yeah. was sitting with her reading a book. I mean, and we did it day after day after week after month after whatever. And it was because learning to read is a really important thing. Mm-hmm. And this is a really important thing. So you do it until they learn it.
Yeah.
You set boundaries until they learn them. You teach gratitude until they learn it. You yeah. do it because yeah. it's so valuable long term. Mm-hmm. And you can make excuses for why you didn't help your child learn to read, but that is going to bite you for way longer than it should.
Yeah. And again, I think this is just where you're, you know, early years of parenting, you are just rep after rep after rep after mm. rep. And mm. then someday you are stronger than you ever thought you were. And I think if I could give any words of encouragement for those that are in the trenches, is that you just keep going with funner room. I know, probably so. I mean, whatever stage you're in, feel free to, as soon as, you know, permission, opportunity, resources, whatever, wherever you are, mm-hmm. you know, and don't let the lie sink in that, you know, this is only for teenagers. This is only for older kids. This is not for toddlers. It's a lie. Mm-hmm. You can do this through all the ages. Yeah. I started when Delaney was 12 months, just under 12 months. And then with the other two, they had no hope. We were doing it sooner than that. I think as soon as Lincoln could pull my hair, I was like, oh, that's no fun. No. Did he go to his room? No. But it's just this language.
But he wasn't held. Yeah. He's now on the ground going, I went up. This is a very, yeah. this is a privileged position for you to protect is being in my arms. You smack me in the face and pull my hair. Yep. That's how you get out of this privileged space.
Yes. So again, I would just lean into, ask the hard questions. What are you protecting? What do you want to see developed in your family and your culture? And then go to fight to protect it. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, this is how you build these children up to be powerful adults. And I don't know if you've noticed, but the world could use some powerful adults. And so,
full of respect and responsibility.
Yes. And we need you to do the heavy lifting, because, again, we believe that whole healthy families are going to save the world. And it really starts with you as the parents. So get your reps in. Don't be afraid of it. You were made for this position, and we believe in you. So chase after it, and you can do this. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us on The Kylo Show.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to join us next week when Danny and Brittany talk about abusive relationships and the irresponsibility cycle. Never miss an episode by subscribing to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or watch us on the Loving on Purpose YouTube channel. And don't forget to submit your questions and testimonies to thekyloshow.com. The Kylo Show is produced by Ali Armading, co-produced by Ashley Beck, Leah Alexander, Anna Hill, and Sherry Silk, sound engineered and edited by Taylor Silk, and show promoter Christian Zamora. That's it for this week. We'll see you next time.